If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56david.com. Atlantic Coast Mortgage, Equal Housing Lender, NMLS 643-114.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Career Vision Podcast. I'm Michael Pith, and this is episode 2 of our podcast. Thank you to everyone that checked out our very first podcast with John Williams and Pete Zimmerman from WGN Radio. Response was great on that, so thank you so much for it. I think you're going to love this conversation as well. But before we get into it, we want to thank our sponsors, Career Vision, who make this thing happen, and what they do is they help you discover your strengths and navigate your career journey. You can learn more at careervision.org. Episode 2 guest is going to be Scott Chagnon from Marquee. And Scott and I go, wow, eight years ago. Scott's actually here right now with me.
That's right. And I wanted to see the studios.
He wanted to see the studios. We actually have windows here. We go all the way back to NBC Sports, Comcast Sportsnet, CSN, whatever you wanted to call it back in the day. Yep. And Scott, the way we kick things off on this podcast is you got to give a shout out to your high school. So off the bat.
Absolutely.
Go for it.
Champaign Central High School, home of the Maroons.
Yeah.
Class of 06.
What do you know? Did you know what you wanted to do in high school?
I think I was so involved in sports. I played football and basketball and just being around friends. I think at the time it was like once I get to college, I'll figure it out. I thought I'd play sports in college, especially football. And, you know, I had an injury. I tore my ACL week four of my senior year. I thought, you know, the world is ending. Everything's done. Like, but with one door closing, another one opened and realized, like, a family friend had a video camera available.
Okay.
And I was on the sideline of our football team's final season games throughout the regular season and into the playoffs. And I just kind of had fun shooting game action.
Yeah.
My grandparents bought me a new Mac laptop, which at the time was unheard of for...
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
It was like one of the first MacBooks, and it had iMovie on it. I had never really heard of it. And I'm just putting clips together with, like, the star transition or, like, you know, the swirl transition, the basic transitions, and I would put music to it, and I thought it was the coolest thing ever.
So you were kind of learning on your own.
Yeah, I just kind of taught it myself, and this is my senior year in high school. I'd never even thought of any kind of video or anything like that as far as a career.
I should mention, and I meant to do this at the top here, Scott is the digital content manager at Marquee.
That's correct.
Which, I mean, when we talk about digital and our titles, I've got digital in my title. It's a little bit of a loaded title in a way. And you have to be someone who's worn a
wide
lot of hats.
Net.
And
wide net.
Yeah, big wide net. So you're doing that, and then you go to Southern Illinois.
Yes.
What brought you there?
So, I mean, Southern Illinois, Carbondale is where I was one of the schools I potentially thought I'd play football at. Mm-hmm. Obviously, with the injury, everything happened. That didn't happen. But I stayed in touch with the coaches. I said, hey, I know I probably won't be a good player for you guys, but would there be a chance I could still be a part of the staff? I've picked up video. I'd love to be a filmer with your team. And they said, absolutely, we actually need a filmer.
Oh, that's cool.
Coming in. So I did the all 22, you know, practice footage from either the scissor lift that went up high in the air.
Holy cow.
Or in the, yeah, scary. And they'd chain you in and like you're locked in there. But I'm fearless. I don't have a fear of heights or anything like that. Or also they would also put me in the press box for the other angle.
Did they have classes or clubs there that you also were getting into?
Yeah, so obviously Southern was a big choice, and why I went there was they have a radio television department in Carbondale.
There's a lot of options. TV and radio personalities and also producers that went to SIU.
Yeah.
John Williams, who we just had in our first episode, SIU alum as well.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're going there with a bunch of people that are wanting to do that too.
Yeah. And obviously I took a lot of classes for, you know, sports and video and journalism and such. But a lot of my classmates were involved with the TV side of SIU, PBS, and all the local stations.
Okay.
And then the radio stuff. But with my job, I really didn't have time for any of that. So I was focused solely on SIU athletics. And
wow.
So I did not just football stuff, but I did stuff with basketball. I graduated in May of 2010.
Okay.
I took an internship with Southern Illinois Miners.
I was going to ask, where internship-wise, what were you doing there?
That was my first ever internship out of college, and it was with Chris Hagstrom with SIU Miners.
The Miners, is that was independently?
It was independent league.
Yeah, is that Frontier League?
They are no longer, I think they're still.
I'm trying to remember from my boomers days.
It was the Frontier League, yes.
Yeah, okay. There's a couple Frontier League alums that have also come
so
through
I, like,
here, like
as
Joe
an intern,
Brandt.
Like, I dressed up as a mascot. I was, I did every single job available there, and I did it for 2 months, and not even finished my internship before my boss at the Miners took a job back at SIU to run their new video services department at SIU.
Wow.
They had just renovated the football stadium, brand new stadium they renovated the basketball arena to have a video board, and they trashed the old stadium, football stadium, and built a brand new stadium with a video board.
Wow.
So they basically needed a staff to run all that stuff. And so here I am, 2 months out of undergrad, thinking I'm never going to go step foot in a college class again, to then offer me a grad assistantship. They paid for my grad school.
That's awesome.
And I got, you know, your normal paycheck for normal work as well for as being a grad student. And I was back in class summer school. I was like, what am I doing here? But, you know, before you know it, I'm teaching college kids how to run camera, how to wrap cable.
Oh, that's cool.
How to do different stuff. I was directing the video board for football and basketball games.
Uh-huh.
Telling, hey, camera A, I need a shot of a fan in the stands. Camera B, I need the head coach. Camera C, I need this.
So you're jumping into this grad assistant job. Are you looking ahead? Like,
yeah.
What's going to be
at
next
that
for
time,
you?
At that time, I'm thinking maybe I'll be in like a game truck for ESPN or CBS or Fox or whoever at any of these, you know, pro or college athletic games, and that'll be my job. Because I was running the video board. I was directing. And I was punching the buttons of what I wanted. To put live action into video.
So
that's what I thought at the time.
What you thought at the time, what actually did happen next?
Well, I got through my grad school. I graduated in December 2011. And I had a few applications. I think I had one with the Memphis Grizzlies.
Oh, cool.
For another internship. And then the other one I was really hoping for was NFL Films. Out in Mount Laurel, New Jersey.
I love NFL Films.
Yeah.
That's next level stuff right there.
I was waiting on both. I got accepted to both, but obviously NFL Films is what I wanted. It was a 3-month internship. It was as soon as the Super Bowl was over, I went over to Mount Laurel and worked from the weekend after the Super Bowl up until the end of May. End of April.
During this time, what are some things you're learning while you're there at NFL Films?
Oh, my gosh. So I was involved with, at the time, it was the NFL Top 10 show. So the top 10 running backs of all time, the top 10 quarterbacks of all time.
I can eat those up.
And it's just great content that you have all these interviews of former players, celebrities, what have you, talking about where they would rank certain players and then where the rankings actually led up to. All the interviews I would have to log. So I would I would write what every question the producer asked that person was for.
Okay.
I'd also have to do research on certain athletes or different players that are in those lists.
How were you doing the research at the time?
They had so much at our disposal there at NFL Films. It's been a while, but
yeah.
we would have different offices where it would have all the library of tapes that are all digitized at the time. Obviously, they have their rooms full of like the actual film, which is insane, which now it's all digital.
Yeah.
But at the time they were switching, it was like half and half. So to still be in that old school range of seeing like the actual film and cranking it through a reel to now it's all digital. It's pretty insane. I was actually shocked how they were kind of late to the party, but at the same time they were still putting out insane.
Well, and they've got the kind of content everyone wants, that everyone's paying for, actually. So you're sitting on a gold mine.
Oh, yeah. I could see stuff that nobody else could see. I was obviously good about it and didn't share any of that. But, like, it was definitely one of those things where you're, like, eye-opening. And in my idol, I guess, you know, growing up watching NFL highlights, was always Steve Sable.
Steve Sable's cool.
And how
that was cool.
He would tell a story through his cameras.
Yeah.
Not just his, but his crew on the sidelines of these games. And the tight spiral and the snow slowly falling down, or
and the voiceover to go with it, right?
All of it. And so I remember bumping into him in the hallway, and this is when he had cancer. He had a bald head, and it was just a quick oh, excuse me, how are you? I'm doing good. Hope you have a good day. Well, whatever. I was like speechless. And then obviously, I think a few months later after my internship, he had passed.
Okay.
But,
gotcha.
Yeah, it was a really cool experience. I learned a lot. I got to go out to the 2012 NFL draft, which is when it was still in New York.
Okay.
This is before they started bouncing.
I was going to say it was there for a long time.
Yeah.
So what were you doing at the draft then?
I think it was more just they gave me a ticket as,
yeah,
just go enjoy yourself. Like, this is a perk that.
That's fun.
Because, like, when you're at an internship like that, you're not in season. You're not able to see any of the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I think a few interns got to go and actually help run camera. My exact internship I had did not involve cameras, which I was kind of upset about. But I still got my foot in the door and still got the internship and still enjoyed my time.
Mm-hmm.
It was more of like a behind-the-scenes producing role with interviews and all that kind of stuff. And it wasn't as hands-on as I had applied for both positions.
I
got the one that with NFL top 10.
Got it.
So it wasn't exactly what I wanted, but I knew my foot was in the door. I was making networking with everybody there.
Yeah, and you're also learning different skills
exactly,
at the same time.
Exactly.
Were live events, live games still something you wanted to do at the time, or how? What was the next step after that?
I think my thing was just to keep introducing myself to people and showing my work ethic.
Yeah.
On not the best, like what kids these days would consider like, that's the coolest thing ever. Like, mm-hmm. I'm going to go do the most boring and like not fun job to do and do it to the best of my ability and show that, hey, this guy's willing
to do what it takes.
Do what it takes to get to where he ultimately wants to be.
I mean, I think I've learned... I mean, over the 15 or so years that I've, you know, been working, is like getting as many different things and experience
is
the best part. So I guess we can fast forward a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So Comcast Sportsnet at the time, NBC Sports Chicago, how did that come together? And, you know, what was the process of joining them like?
So as my internship with NFL Films drew to a near, I knew I had an option. So basically they had... told me that I would be open for a seasonal position with NFL Films.
Okay.
But at the time, it's late April, and the season doesn't start till...
Oh, yeah.
Till, like, September.
Right.
7th or 8th or whatever. And so, this is way back before, you know, jobs like Uber existed, where I could just have my car out there, drive, make money just to get by, and then the season starts, and I'm set.
Yeah.
But I knew, like, at the time, I didn't know anybody out there besides the people I worked with.
Right.
I missed home. I missed Chicago. I missed that area. I'm a huge Chicago sports fan. I miss the Chiefs. I'm sorry.
He was a fan of the Chiefs before it was cool.
I was.
I need to preface that. Yeah.
back in the Tony Gonzalez days.
Yeah.
Trent Green and those guys. But yeah, so.
Priest Holmes.
Yeah, Priest Holmes.
Let's go.
Boy. No, so yeah, it was. I knew I wanted to get back to Chicago if I could find something full time. And it was one of those things where I looked at WGN. They at the time had the Cubs, I believe.
Yep.
NBC Sport, or actually it was then Comcast Sportsnet.
Mm-hmm.
I think I looked at ESPN 1000 Radio. I looked at different things of like where I can show my my expertise.
Yeah. So were you kind of putting yourself out there? Were you like sending your resume to
I think or? I had a few phone calls, but there were positions open that I applied for.
Yeah.
And one at Comcast Sportsnet was just a part-time digital video editor.
Okay.
And I got, I think I got an email or a phone call 2 weeks later, and they said they'd like to set up an interview.
Yeah. What was that? What was that like?
Jake Flanagan, who's now the, GM of CHGO,
yep.
Was at CSN Chicago digital team at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And he had reviewed my application and called me up. We had an interview over the phone, and by the time the phone call was over, he's like, "You basically got the job if you want it."
Wow, yours went a lot different than mine.
He was basically saying like, "Your resume is way beyond this job, but if this is something you want, it's all yours." Like, I think at the time they still wanted me to come in for an in-person interview just to make sure, like, what they heard on the phone was correct. They didn't offer it to me at the time, but it was kind of like hinted, like, if you come up here and you're most likely going to get the position. So,
what were some of those early responsibilities you had at that time?
When I got the job?
When you got the job, yeah.
So as the part-time digital editor, basically when games would be on, so whether it be Bulls, Blackhawks, White Sox, Cubs, even Bears games, we would have post-game shows,
yep.
pre-game shows, and different content revolving around the Bears. I would see all the video ingested, and then I would cut interview clips, put graphics on it for the website at the time.
Yeah.
CSNChicago.com, that doesn't exist, so don't even try and go to it.
Sky Point to that.
So I would handle all those video edits of sound bites. I would do smaller highlight videos for sports that we had rights to. So we had rights to NHL and NBA.
Right.
So we would do a lot of digital video content.
We called some of those in 60 too, right? Was that what it was called? Like the 60
second? Oh, yeah.
Second?
Hawks in 60 or
yeah.
White Sox in 60 where it wraps it up in 60 seconds.
Yeah.
But we would also do like similar to what I did in NFL Films, top five or top mm-hmm. 10 lists, and we add graphics in there and different stuff like that, which a lot of companies still do today. I know, Marquee, we do it as well.
Yeah.
But that was like my role, was like handling when games would come in, I'd get in pregame for all the pregame sound. I'd handle that. In game, if Derrick Rose had an awesome dunk, I'm cutting it
mm-hmm.
you know, for our website and for our app. And then postgame, whatever they said, win or lose, you're handling that postgame content. The postgame show when, you know, Will Produce says something about the team, we would cut that and put it on the site, and then maybe one of our writers would write a story about it, and hopefully it gets picked up on Google or Yahoo or whatever.
I remember when I joined, that was a time where digital was becoming a bigger focus for NBC Sports, CSN at the time. Do you remember what that was like and how your role was kind of changing as the focus shifted more to digital?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like there was the divide of TV and digital.
Right.
Because you got two different silos in a way. And we mm-hmm. were in this, you remember, the fishbowl.
It was literally a fishbowl.
Well, to describe CSN Chicago Studios or then NBC Sports
Studios. And Ernie, who is here, Ernie Skatton, who I have to just thank every time I do this. He helps us with the editing here. He is also in a fishbowl. But people come to him because they want to talk sports with him. But yeah, the fishbowl.
Yeah, so we were in the basement at NBC Sports Chicago.
It was the Sun Times building, right? And it was in the basement.
Yeah, so you walk in. To the right is all the TV production, all the bullpen desks over there. But then to the left was sales and marketing and everybody else. And I think they decided, hey, let's put up a wall of glass so that these cubicles and doors can talk at a lot louder voice.
Yeah,
in my opinion, that's why they had the glass up.
Yeah,
so that when we're in there and games, we're screaming and hollering, hey, let's get this on the side, let's do this, like other people trying to do their desk jobs that are involved with sales or whatever don't have to hear us yapping. So I think that's why
I can still hear you from
I'm sure, yeah. It wasn't perfect.
No, it was great.
Definitely not. But no, we had a great team in there. We called it Feed the Beast.
Mm-hmm.
TK Gore was our director at the time, so he would keep pointing that phrase, Feed the Beast being the fan, wanting all the content on their teams.
One of the most supportive people you're going to find, too.
He's great.
I love TK when I got to work with him.
And so my job obviously went from, you know, editing your pre-post in-game content to also finding different content that our fans are looking for.
I remember there was... at the time, you also had social media was coming on.
Yeah.
And trying to find...
I didn't have a Twitter until I got to see us.
I think the only reason I had a Twitter was because I wanted to see what Shaq and Amari Stoudemire were tweeting out, because that's what it was all about, was basically, here I can see what the NBA people really think, you know, without any filter.
I don't even think I had Instagram at the time.
That was coming on.
Snapchat got in around 2014 or something.
Yeah.
I remember I was big on that, but then it kind of faded. I don't know. It's just, but I always tried to find different ways I could put my foot in the door, not just with digital,
mm-hmm.
but with TV.
Yes.
And I would do that. I would go to Sarah Lauk, who at the time was there, and she'd be working on a show called Beer Money or Gas Money.
Right.
I think there's been two versions of it. And we would go out with a camera crew, and she would always just have one camera guy go out and they would shoot stuff. I was like, you want a second camera? To like edit more?
Yeah.
Sure. And I volunteered. Nobody told me to do it. I went to her office. I said, I'd like to get more experience. How can I get more? I'd love to be a second camera for some of these shoots you guys do. Learn more from the lead videographers that are there.
Mm-hmm.
They're still now with CHSN. I know Corby is still over there.
And I run into Corby, and I've run Eric into Fogle. Steve. I know Eric Fogle's, Steve G every once in a while, too.
Yeah, Steve. Eric Fogle's, I believe he's out of the business now, but I think he does freelance.
He sneaks in every once in a while, yeah.
But those guys were great. They taught me a lot. And, you know, I always wanted to find different ways. So one thing I talked to Jake Flanagan at the time was, like, they had taken over the high school vibe.
Mm-hmm.
So they had what they called the drive with Simeon and Jabari Parker.
Right.
They covered those teams. And I would see those little episodes, and it reminded me a lot of NFL films, in a sense. Not trying to compare that, but, like, they would do little recaps of practice and the game, almost like a Hard Knocks.
Well, and that also plays into your experience with what you were doing in high school and college, too.
And so I felt like, why don't I kind of take the reins of the drive for football and basketball? We would pick a high school team. I think my first team was Joliet Catholic.
Wow.
And they had all the history.
You had a pretty good run, if I remember. Oh, yeah. Who are some of the other schools?
We had Joliet Catholic. We had Providence, who won it all.
Uh-huh.
And I think 15 or 16. We did Stevenson, Homewood Flossmoor.
Big schools. These are real big schools.
Yeah, these are the big ones. We would talk to Edgy Tim.
Who's
the team that's most likely going to get to the playoffs? And, we would pick a team and ride with them. So once training camp started in summer, we'd be out there all the way through until they lost in the playoffs or won state like Providence did. So.
Wow. So when I go back to when I joined, was a really cool time in Chicago sports, and to be a part of Chicago sports media. It's 2016, so you know where I'm going next with this. This is the Chicago Cubs on their World Series run. And you grew up a Cubs fan.
Yeah.
What was that season like for you? We'll get into the really, really cool part later, but what was that like being a fan and a professional at the same time?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing was I always wanted to be at the games.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew getting my job as a digital video editor was fine, but it got my foot in the door.
Yeah.
But I did everything I could, even up until that season, to show, like, I need to be at these ball games so I can produce content.
Well, and you were very proactive about it, right? Which is huge.
And so the fact that all kind of stars aligned in 15 and obviously in 16, all that hard work had paid off where, you know, bosses at NBC or Comcast Sportsnet at the time realized, hey, Scott would be an asset at these locations.
Right.
And what got me at the ballpark for all these games was Snapchat.
That's right.
we didn't really have a social team. When did you start?
So I started 2016. It was literally right at Crosstown. Like, my first job was Crosstown.
Okay.
And,
Were you hired as the...
I was the social media coordinator at the time. Nicole...
That's right. So we did have a social team. But it was... we were still finding... It was very new.
It was very new. But, I know that there was a pretty good foundation of, like, kind of here's what these things do.
Yeah.
That Nicole, who then went on to the Cubs, and now she runs Bears. Awesome. Digital right now and is doing incredible stuff there.
Oh, yeah.
But this was like, okay, what can we do more with these things? Because I think the first thing I did, it was like day two was, hey, do a Facebook Live with Paul Konerko.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I have my back of the knee is like shaking while I'm like trying to hold this iPad with him. And he's getting interviewed there. And
Bob Barker mics.
With our Bob Barker. Those things are the best.
Plugs into the phone, get good audio.
But then I'm out there in, you know, at Wrigley, at the time it was U.S. Cellular Field, during Crosstown. But there was a lot of hype and a lot of fun going on. You didn't have to be a Cubs fan to kind of understand this is pretty big for the city.
Oh, yeah.
And all of a sudden, we are realizing, hey, we've got something special here going into the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Do you remember what those meetings were like from your vantage point? Like, how are we going to cover this?
Oh, man. I think it was the Giants series in the regular season. They were really good at the time.
Yeah.
And they came in, I think the Cubs swept them in like August.
Yeah.
And we all realized, oh my gosh, this team's for real. When they sweep a team like them that's coming into Wrigley, mm-hmm. I think it was like a 4-game series too.
Yeah.
Could be wrong. Don't quote me.
I want to say, was Jake Peavy a part? I don't know.
Might have been.
Yeah.
But after that series, it was like, all right, this team's like ready for a postseason run.
Yeah.
And we would have our content meetings every week, and we would go through different things. And I think a lot of things with you and your position at the time was you were there pregame, but then you'd hustle back and be ready to tweet out or
Facebook.
We
were cutting highlights as
they're
going on.
You guys get all the feeds into the station.
Right.
And you would have all this at your disposal, but you didn't have as many boots on the ground at the actual ballpark during the game. And so I proposed I would do all the pregame video work.
Mm-hmm.
To help with the pregame show and all that stuff. We would do social, like Facebook Lives. I think at the time, Tony Andracki and Dan Hayes, who covered the White Sox, came over to help cover Cubs. Patrick Mooney obviously was there. And we would do all these different, social media videos.
We were doing Periscope.
Yeah.
We remember what
that
Periscope was, which was like Twitter Live eventually.
Yeah.
And I remember, because I could not get a good reception. You were able to get a good reception. And I was like, Scott, can you handle the Snapchat so we can get this what it's like to be in the ballpark during a Cubs World Series run? And you handled
I think at the time
Ernie's shooing us away. I'm a Sox fan too, man.
It's okay. I would pick up the Snapchat and like run around, and I knew the rules were at the time where we can't show game highlights.
That's right.
And so my creative self was like, all right, I'm going to film fans stagnant before a big play every time. And then once the big play happened, I would push that out. If they grounded out or whatever, I'd delete the video. But I would get all these videos behind the scenes, the hush of the crowd before the 3-2 pitch, and then Chris Bryant homer over the fence and see the fans go wild. So I would find different ways to capture what it was like for fans that were not there inside the ballpark in different spots that the broadcast would never show.
I one of the things I got to do is, as I handed that part off to you, was I was able to go up into the press box, and I think what everyone really wanted to get was whoever was going to be singing Seventh Inning Stretch.
Oh, yeah. In the booth, right?
In the booth. Yeah. And I got into, like, the whole place is totally cramped because this is when Eddie Vedder comes in, and he's there with Len. He does it, and I'm kind of got this spot that is maybe like two steps away from the door as everyone's trying to cram in there, and I'm on my own. And he gets done singing. It was amazing.
Yeah.
Just like everybody that was, I think Bill Murray did one too. Vince Vaughn was another one. I have another Vince Vaughn story for another podcast, which was really fun. But he comes out, and Len Casper, the Cubs TV play-by-play at the time, was trying to do some radio. He comes out of the radio booth to meet with Eddie, and Eddie's leaning in going, hey, was I okay? And I get that on camera. That was my moment of the Cubs World Series, behind the scenes. But you had an even cooler one. As you're talking about getting fans' reactions as things are happening, you go to Game 7.
Yeah.
Now, there was you going back and forth to Cleveland. There's just some fun stories around that alone.
On the rides over, it was me and the beat writers. So Tony Andracki, it was Dan Hayes, I think.
Was Vinny Duker in there?
Actually, it was J.J. Stankovic was with us.
Right.
So that's four. We would talk about Game of Thrones. No, maybe it was Walking Dead at the time. That was when Negan was introduced.
Right.
So that was the craze. 2016, that's when Negan's bashing.
I will say, Scott and I used
AMC.
To do a Walking Dead podcast for a little bit. So
Flashback
there.
But yeah, we would talk about that. And then eventually, the last 30 minutes on the ride to Cleveland, I would pull up Facebook Live, and we would go for 30 minutes. It was like a car ride, and they would just talk baseball. It was so cool.
And you would get...
We did it two times.
You would get so many views on that alone.
Oh, yeah.
And this is kind of how we were also learning other things to do with Facebook Live at the time, which was very new that summer. And you're there, Game 7.
Yep.
The only people that are working back at the station are the non-Cubs fans, like me and a handful of other people.
Yeah.
But we still appreciate it as was going on. And you put yourself with Brett Eldridge at the time. How did that go?
Well, okay, so every single home playoff game and every game of the World Series I covered, except for Game 5, I was able to get tickets through our work raffle.
Mm-hmm.
Took my dad. So that was the only game I didn't work, was Game 5 when the Cubs won for the only time at Wrigley Field.
Yeah.
Side note. But, yes, going back to Cleveland, Game 7, I had done every single game I had just done Snapchat in-game. But this game, I was like, this is Game 7. This is it. So I not only did Snapchat, but I grabbed our digital ENG video camera, shot HD video.
Yeah.
And I would have that on my right shoulder, and on my left hand, I would have my phone for other things, for Snapchat.
Multitasking.
And I would, from the start of the game to the end of the game, I roamed the whole stadium and got fans biting towels, whether it be Cleveland or Cubs fans, mm-hmm. of nerves, like freaking out, waiting for a play. I would get all the behind the scenes thinking, if the Cubs win, we're going to want to do like documentary style content on this stuff, and we need cutaway shots that the broadcast probably won't give us, or we won't have enough of. And so I would go around and roam. And I remember in the early innings, I spotted on Snapchat, or maybe it was Instagram at the time, Brett Eldred's location.
Yeah.
He had posted where he was sitting with his dad and his brother. and I thought it was in a box. I didn't think anything of it.
Yeah.
And then once, after the rain delay, it's the ninth inning, it's getting close, I was like, I'm going to go up to that area where I think he might be. I thought he was in like a higher box.
Yeah.
But lo and behold, I get up there and there he is with his dad.
Among so, fans. Just
yes,
being
among fans.
A,
nobody's
fan.
Paying attention to him. Yeah. It's like, I did not want to like interrupt his viewing experience. But luckily, right in front of him was like a rail as the steps kind of curved to go down to, mm-hmm. to the aisle there. And so I stood up, and there was a spot where I'm not obscuring any fans' view, and I had the video camera, and I filmed the final out, the dribbler to Brian, over to Rizzo, and then I pan directly over to Brett Eldridge, who's going ecstatic with his dad and his brother.
Yeah.
And I had the microphone tested, ready to go. I just handed Brett Eldridge the mic, and he went off for about 2 minutes about how excited he was.
To have the wherewithal during that, to like be confident, one,
yeah.
to just, because you're... For those that are listening, maybe not know, Brett Eldridge, big country star
yes.
at the time, from Illinois, grew up a huge yep. Cubs fan. You know him very well, big fan of him.
I was a huge fan.
Yeah.
I still am.
And you're able to just keep it cool, have some questions ready, check your equipment, and then do this.
Yeah, so I was doing all these, we call them faxes, fax to check out equipment before
yeah.
your action is about to happen. So I'm faxing all this stuff while like, commercials are in play, making sure I check, microphone works, color balance is good on the camera, everything is okay, focus, if I had to turn, is he in focus? Small stuff like that you don't really think about in the moment.
Right.
But I knew I wanted to capture the final out, and then I wanted to be in a position where all I had to do was turn around and get his reaction. Because from my angle, like, you're just getting the same angle that the truck has, but the difference with mine is that you're connecting it to a story of somebody that's there in person.
Mm-hmm.
And not only is it just a regular fan, it's Brett Eldridge
right.
with his family. And, you know, it's probably not what all Cubs fans were waiting to hear,
no.
you know. But it's just a side story of a celebrity.
It's a story. There are so many stories around this game
alone.
And I
got a DM on the road home from Brett Eldridge on Twitter. I'm like, oh, my God. I was asking him questions, like, can I get the names of people? Like, he wanted the video and all this stuff. So, like, I still try and share it every year.
And what actually came from that was getting that footage, having that out is, as you mentioned, Sarah Lauk and Ryan McGuffey
yeah.
then reached out to him to narrate
yeah.
the documentary they did on Game 7,
yeah.
on that 2016 Cubs team. So good job on that front.
Yeah.
Really good.
I'm still waiting for my in-person like meet and greet, and I can be like, hey, I was the guy that filmed you.
Your very good friend, Brett Eldridge.
Yeah, my very good, close, personal friend.
Personal friend. I can't even talk. Yes, purse. Yeah. So fast forward,
yeah.
Marquee is coming together.
Yeah.
And some people that are listening to this podcast are people who may be thinking about a career change.
Sure.
So you get to experience that in this situation where the Cubs are starting a network
yep.
to cover. They're starting their network for their
I knew
games.
The Cubs were leaving
yeah.
the NBC.
Leaving
umbrella.
What was that process like?
I, at the time, did not intend on leaving NBC. I remember it was Christmas of 19.
Mm-hmm.
No, Christmas of 20.
It was right 20, before the pandemic.
Right before the pandemic. So
yeah.
December 2019, Christmas Day, I wake up and I'm looking at Instagram, or LinkedIn, I should say,
mm-hmm.
and I saw Jake Flanagan, who had hired me from my start date in May of 2012 at NBC,
yeah.
Had accepted the role as director of video, digital video at Marquee, or the digital department, I should say. And I was like, oh my gosh, congratulations. He had been out of NBC for a few years. He'd worked at State Farm, and I saw he got the job there. All I did was congratulate him and say best of luck. And then the next day he reached out, said, hey, thanks for the note. Would you have any interest in coming? I was like, I didn't really think about it. I'd built my career at NBC. I'd done so much to put my foot in the door to show my worth, and I was
doing more and more things.
I was given much more responsibility at the time, and in 2019, that was when I really started to grow, like as a career at NBC.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw my vision at the time was to stay there.
Well, and you had worked an Olympics. You had covered the Olympics.
I got to go out to Pyeongchang, South Korea, in 2018.
So you weren't just working locally; you were working internationally, but also with NBC corporate.
And I knew I'd still do my Cubs coverage and all that stuff, but you know, I think, especially for young people to understand, like, in order to continue to grow, especially financially, is you got to make tough decisions sometimes to go to different roles that will pay you an increase excess more than a typical yearly raise.
Yeah.
And I quickly realized that, you know, that money was significant, especially living in Chicago. When I got here, I was part-time making $15 an hour for 2 years.
Mm-hmm. Your priorities are changing, and you're getting older. Yeah.
I'm still a college kid. I like to go out. I like to go to sporting events. I like to go to concerts.
Yeah.
And that money catches up to you after a while. And so, you know, like realizing that, hey, sometimes after a few years, a move like that is important. And mm-hmm. I'm glad I did it. And to start at Marquee in 2020 before the pandemic, and to go through the pandemic was
insane. Were gearing up for a Cubs season, and all of a sudden that season was on hold for several months. But again, it's almost like a startup though.
And it's because of the pandemic I wouldn't be doing what my current role is with Marquee.
Yeah, explain that.
I'd always found photography to be fascinating. My whole career had been video up until that point. I had Matt Buckman, who was a creative video guy at NBC at the time, worked really close with Ryan McGuffey and Sarah.
Mm-hmm.
I had asked him, he had some photography experience, and I was like looking to do it as like a hobby in my off time, city photography, different things like that.
Yeah.
So I got a used Sony camera and a lens, whatever. Mm-hmm. And I remember at NBC, I would take a few pictures at spring training, nothing crazy. But during the pandemic, we had, as a startup, we had bought all this equipment, and one of them was a brand new Sony camera, a whole plethora of lenses.
Mm-hmm.
And I had talked to Jake. I was like, hey, can I use some of these or just some boxes unopened? He's like, yeah, have fun, whatever. And during the pandemic, I would get on YouTube. I would teach myself certain things. I went downtown and took pictures of the city when there's nobody in the streets. Chicago theater, it's like zombie land out there. It was wild. Nobody was outside.
Scott actually photographed my proposal to my
wife during the pandemic.
During the pandemic, where it looked like we had the city to ourselves.
Yeah.
So.
That was insane, especially when we were in masks. I couldn't hug you. We had the fake hug.
Yeah.
As we socially distanced.
Right.
Wow. Feels like forever ago.
I know. But, seriously.
I realized, like, what can I do that can provide more content than the truck? The truck meaning, like, has 14 cameras at its disposal during a Cubs game. All these Cubs fans are at home. Nobody can go into the stadium. I'm one of the few credentialed employees of the Cubs / Marquee to get into the ballpark to cover it from a visual standpoint. And I'm like, my video camera on my shoulder is not, from like 50, you know, yards away, is not going to get anything different than our legit cameras on massive tripods and massive lenses and all that.
Right.
So I thought, why don't I do photography? And so I started picking that up. Or these cameras are so good that they do photography and they do video.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would flip over a video, but I would get stuff that most likely the truck would not get. So I would focus just on the dugout before, kind of similar to what I did during the World Series with Snapchat.
Yeah.
I would wait for their reaction before a Rizzo home run.
Wow.
Or before a walk-up song, because the players had to make their own energy. So in Rizzo's walk-up song,
it feels more like Little League games at that point, right?
And you see Schwarber going nuts. I would get that kind of content and send it in, and then our social team would blast out. We had that video that nobody else saw until we decided to put it out.
Yeah.
And it's a different angle that nobody else could get, because all they got is the truck camera feeds. So it wasn't like I'm rushing to beat somebody else for this.
Right.
Or they're not gonna, and people, especially today, rip video content and photo content and just take it as their own.
Right.
So that gave us the strong hand and being like, we have this content that we can decide when we want to put it out. And obviously we would do it out quickly, but like before a home run or during a home run reaction, we would get those shots and we'd turn them into GIFs and all that fun stuff. So I realized at the time, because of the pandemic, it opened up my mind to just more beyond videography, but also photography. And now, if you had to ask me, I would rather be a full-time photographer than a videographer. I can do both jobs.
I was going to say, you're all over the place now.
Yeah.
So what are some of the things you're doing right now?
So, talking about like off-season or in-season?
Both. Both.
Man. So, since we're getting close to spring training, I'll start with in-season, and then we'll get into the off-season.
Yeah.
If that works. So, when I go down to cover the Cubs, it's always video priority, especially pregame, postgame, workouts, pregame workouts in the locker room or the clubhouse is what baseball calls it. We'll get all the video scrums, stuff like that, that I would used to do with my old job at NBC. Is our digital team back home in Chicago will edit those and put them on our app and our website. Once those are done, I have reign to shoot B-roll video for our shows, but I also, you know, they're not going to use 2 hours of, you know, the same guy pitching 50 times.
Right.
So I would also take still imagery of these guys. And then we would upload them to our site, and we would categorize them. We would tag them with different names. And so when Tony Andracki writes an article about, at the time, Kyle Hendricks' changeup or something, he would have a photo that I had. And we didn't have to pay Getty.
I was going to say, you're not having to rely on Getty or AP having
And they're
to
not there
stuff.
For workouts. They're not there. Right. They are, like, maybe a day or two, but they're not there every day.
Mm-hmm.
And especially when your writer's like, hey, I'm going to write a story about so-and-so player today. Can you give me a few images? I would go out and get them those images, and it would help entice a click in my mind.
Yeah.
If you see a clear image and a crisp image that tells a story before you even open the story, That's
drawing
half
people.
The game.
That's
you got headlines and you got the image.
I was gonna say that's as important as the headline.
If you have a blurry image or an in-game photo from last season, it's like, okay, this isn't telling me a spring training story,
right?
Like, it helps tell the story, especially if it's an injury. If somebody's on the ground grabbing their leg, and it's not gory, obviously, but like,
right.
You have trainers attending to them. That's an image that helps people click on the story. Stuff like that. So during games, I am in the dugout. After I've done all my video work, pregame stuff, in games, I'm in the dugouts taking still imagery of game action. Pregame, I'm on the field as their players run out of the dugout, get shots of them running onto the field. And then I'm obviously during the game, I'm in both sides, either third base or first base side, getting photo content. And as soon as home runs happen within 30 seconds, our digital team in Chicago has photo access of seven to eight of the best photos from his home run and his trot around the bases.
Wow.
Or let's say I get a big defensive, you know, shortstop play from Dansby Swanson or whoever, and I get a good shot of it, I'll send it in. They'll be able to put it out on Twitter or in Instagram. We do our carousel. We'll do an image first, and then the next slide's a video from our broadcast. The next slide's another angle of the broadcast.
Wow.
Because especially with Instagram, if you just post a video in one spot, it's the reel. You can't do a carousel, from what I understand. So that's been our way, is just a lot of times is to make a carousel. The first image is the crack of the bat still image that I get.
Yep.
They'll put a bug on the corner, or they'll put stats in there like, this player is, you know, 8 of their last 15 plate appearances and has had 2 home runs, whatever the stats are beneath it.
And you'll see like teams, other networks, that's now becoming their practice, but you had that pretty early on, being able to
I don't think there's any other RSNs that have live photographers.
That's true, though.
Or
they probably
especially with MLB, they call them LCCs.
Okay.
And they're just content creators that shoot both photo and video that you see on like MLB's social channels.
Yeah.
And it definitely looks different than the broadcast cameras. It's crisp. It's not saying that those cameras aren't crisp, but like they're 4K, and it's
stuff.
Like it's nuts. So I do some video content, but because we have a whole truck worth of video, our social teams, like Scott, unless it's like the biggest play of the day, let's just focus on photos. And those can be archived, and we can use them on stories. We can use them as thumbnails on our app, so that it helps entice a click to watch a video on the Marquee Sports Network app.
I appreciate you doing this with us, and I know I've had you for a long time, and I also
no worries,
but it's been a great conversation.
Absolutely.
To wrap this up, someone who is interested in what you do or the industry that you're in, what advice do you have for them? Or what's one piece of advice you have for them?
I think that answer's come out in a lot of this conversation.
It is, yeah.
But yeah, I would say continue to network and find ways to make yourself uncomfortable in your profession.
And get more comfortable doing it, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And wear as many hats as you can, especially when you're young and in a role, especially like me at the time, part-time at NBC.
I did
what I was asked to do during my hours.
Yeah.
And then I would volunteer time of my own free time, not asking for money, and get that experience and show that, hey, I'm here to help in any way possible. And then that's how you get more roles coming your
way. And that's,
and meeting people and building realistic, genuine relationships.
When you're looking at, when someone's looking at a resume or they're talking to you in an interview, if they hear about all these things you're doing, you become way more valuable.
And you need to show they're passionate about
it. Exactly. That this is something I care a lot about.
Yeah.
And I'm going to do a good job of it. But I've got a lot of experience in all these things. I remember my interview, Christina Quinn, she interviewed me. I had like five people interview me at NBC.
Wow.
And TK, I think TK was one of them. Wow. Jeff Newich and Jessica Felton, now Jessica Taylor, who, I can thank her for the rest of my life for that opportunity. But that was a big part of it, is being able to show, hey, I know what all these other departments are doing.
Yeah.
And so I understand that too. So that's something to always consider.
Yeah. And I think, you know, everywhere I've been, there's always been a sense of like a family with the coworkers you're with.
Mm-hmm.
And you build those relationships with, and you go to war with these people. Sometimes you're with these people more than you are with your family or your significant others.
Yeah.
And you need to have those relationships. So
be a good teammate.
Yes.
Seriously.
Yes.
Be a good teammate. That's going to be on a t-shirt at some point. Scott, thank you
very
much for doing this. I think we could just kind of end it here. Thank you to Career Vision for supporting this podcast. Thank you to Ernie, who sat with us here and has made this sound so much better than I could ever do it.
Thank you.
And for Scott,
yes.
I'm Michael Piff. We'll see you next time.